on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Portfolio Manager, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our April 6, 2015 edition of InvestTalk. And I kind of sound like I'm too far away from the mic. Am I too far away, Jorge? I'm good? Okay. Jorge is our engineer. Now, welcome to our Monday, April 6th edition of InvestTalk. This is our one-hour session about protecting and growing your money. And our first priority, as always, is answering your questions. And you can get your question or comment to us at 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278. Or you can always take to Twitter, and you can send a message to the @InvestTalk handle. That's our Twitter ID. Or you can get a note directly to me by clicking on the Contact Steve or Contact Justin button right there on InvestTalk.com. Now, our goal here is to help you make better investing decisions. And there are certain really valuable decision-making skills that come from learning the principles of investing, buying and selling assets. Now, one of those is understanding fundamentals and comparing your company of interest with their competitors. How do they stack up? That's the big question. It's a question you should always have the answer to. Now, when comparing the fundamentals of companies, it's important to identify the typical characteristics of the competitors with their respective industries. Each industry has its own dynamics. Every competitor has their own dynamics in relation to each other. So when you're studying that, you need to understand the industry. Now, growth is probably the most talked about differentiator in the marketplace today, as technology earnings growth typically outpaces many other industries. And everyone wants to talk about technology. Everyone gets excited about technology because they see it, they feel it, they understand it. It's ever-changing, ever-moving. There's always new opportunities. However, in my many years of research, the biggest difference between these segments in the marketplace is profit margins. Did you know that? It's not growth. It's profit margins. Tech companies traditionally have high profit margins. Now, software companies have the biggest profit margins usually. Hardware companies, much, much lower. Did you know that? Do you understand that dynamic? Why that is? Apple is a hardware company, but their margins are very large. Why is that? They make software, but they don't really sell software. They sell devices, hardware. So understanding the dynamics of the industry is extremely important. Now, some sectors, such as commodities and retail, boast margins in the single digits. And why is that? Well, because it's hard to differentiate yourself. If you're selling a commodity, one barrel of oil from this company and another barrel of oil from the other company, it probably doesn't operate differently. When you put it into production, whether it's in a car or in a factory or wherever, both barrels of oil are going to act the same. Right? Same with gold and all the other types of commodities that are out there. It's really all about the management and the process of the company. They produce those things cheap. And the difference in cost to get it out of the ground is usually not that different, not dramatically different, at least, between companies within an industry. Same with retail. You're just reselling a good, and you can't. It's hard to really you push your margins up too big, and you put your prices up too high, you compete yourself out of the marketplace. All right? Commodities. Development expenses are a very high portion of their costs. However, each additional customer adds minimal cost to their business structure. I mean, on a software company, in a software firm, that's how that works. That's why their margin's so huge. Because every incremental customer in a software company goes straight to the bottom line, pretty much. Might have to pay a salesperson or whatever, but the margins are huge. Goes the other way as well. You start losing customers, profits can diminish quickly. Now, for example, Walmart has carried a net margin of between 3 and 4% for the past 10 years. It's a retail company. Whereas Microsoft net margins have hung around 30% during that same period of time. Does that mean Microsoft's a much better company? No, not necessarily, because margins aren't the whole picture. If I sold 100 units at 3 to 4% margin, and another company sold one unit at 30% margin, what would you rather have? I'd rather have the company that's selling 100 units at 3 to 4% margin. Right? So that's another factor. That's called turnover. Asset turnover. How quickly are you turning over those assets? How quickly are you selling your products every year? It's a very important aspect to investing that you need to understand. So what does this difference in profitability mean to you? We're going to pick that up on next time on Invest Talk. Now let's get to work answering some of the questions that are important to you. Now remember, you can talk to us live 4 to 5 Pacific time on Invest Talk, or in between times you can leave your question. Now we're going to go straight to a live caller, however, and talk to John in San Diego. How you doing, John?
Fine, Justin. I wanted to ask you, and I know your grandfather didn't like airlines, but I had bought Alaska Airlines, ALK is the symbol, and I bought it at 68, you know, maybe 2 weeks ago or something. But it seems like it's going down 9-10%. Is there a reason why? I thought it was a pretty strong airline, you know, relative to the group, and I didn't think gasoline was going to jump up. Did it break through any supports? You think it'll go lower? What is your opinion on it?
Well, it's going lower for, I think, a couple reasons. Airlines have been downgraded. Their numbers for the first quarter aren't as strong as a lot of analysts had expected. That's one. Two, you've seen oil prices tick up a little bit over the past couple months because the dollar has stopped going up. You know, the dollar over the past 3-4 weeks has really started to weaken, and that's pushed oil prices up, and obviously that's their biggest expense is oil prices. And, you know, this is a sector that's extremely overvalued. There's been a lot of consolidation in the industry, and to me, airlines are very much like commodities to me. Do you really care that much about what airline you take as long as they get you there safely? You don't.
Right, you're right.
No one really cares. And so you're going to pick the cheapest airline at the end of the day, most likely. Recently you've had a lot of consolidation, airlines buying airlines, and now you only have a handful of players in the industry, and you almost have kind of an oligopoly, where it's just a handful of players, and they're really not competing each other out of the marketplace. And so I think that's why the airlines have done so well. Almost all of them are extremely overvalued. I wouldn't say Alaska is the most expensive airline out there, but it's certainly not the cheapest either. So I'm not a fan of airlines, just like my grandfather wasn't, because, you know, like I said, it's, to me, this is just a commodity type of industry. And eventually what happens when prices go up and profits get better, you have new entrants into the marketplace. They try to expand their routes, new competitors come in, and that starts pushing down profits. Now, when will that happen in the airline industry? You know, only time will tell, but it's probably sooner rather than later. And you can see what happened in the oil industry. Oil prices at $100 a barrel, they were very profitable at that time. So what did everyone do? All these new companies started popping up and trying to service the oil industry and drilling and trying to make this huge profit because oil prices were so high. And what did that do? That created oversupply. And at some point, in the airline industry, you're going to see the exact same thing. But like I said, when that's going to finally hit the marketplace, it's hard to tell. But on a long-term basis, I would not be investing in Alaska Airlines.
Well, Justin, what is their estimated earnings for year end for 2016 or maybe out to 2017? What do they project, or the analysts or what have you?
Let me pull that up real quick. I know that I think it was, what was it? US Airways. I know they had a profit warning from an analyst and a downgrade last week, and this was kind of I mean, they're the biggest airline out there, so you can see that's what's happening in the overall industry. And that same thing is happening here with Alaska. Now, in 2015, earnings are supposed to be $6.05. That's up 45%. But it's only supposed to go up 6% next year, and analysts have been downgrading their earnings projections for this year and next year. So what will that finally end up at? I'm not sure. But at these levels, they're not super overvalued when you think generally, 15 P ratio doesn't seem that expensive. But like I said, in an industry where traditionally it's kind of a boom and bust cycle, I think we're closer to the end of the boom cycle in airlines than we are to the than we are at the beginning. And there'll be a bust here probably in the next few years.
Okay, I
Okay.
appreciate that, Justin.
Thanks, John. Thanks for calling. Now, there's a new way to get into the conversation on InvestTalk. You can send your questions or comments via Twitter now to @InvestTalk. That's InvestTalk with two T's. You can get your question to us the same way. Or you can always use the old-fashioned way that's been around for 100-plus years. The telephone still works. Give us a call. 888-99-CHART. Diversification. So one of the basic principles of keeping risk in check in your portfolio, in your investing life. But there is a wrong way to diversify. You have to know how to do it the right way. We're going to talk about big mistakes investors make when they diversify, and there are plenty. And it's not, and you're probably sitting there, oh, I'm diversified. I know it. Vast majority of people don't know really what true diversification means, what are ways to diversify that make sense and that work. And ultimately, when you think you're diversified, does that mean you're immune to economic downturns or not? So we're going to talk about that coming up on today's show. But I also have kind of a million talking points to touch on. Number one is going to be the jobs report. And we had the jobs report on Friday. Market was closed, so it was supposed to react today, and it did in the morning. Market was down. But we're going to talk about that. Market ended up, but mainly that's because the market's expecting the Fed to push off the rate hikes a little longer. But what does this mean? 126,000 jobs created in March. We're going to touch on that and what that means for the economy going forward. And what is the strong dollar? What impact is that having on the jobs market, on the manufacturing sector? All that. That's extremely important. We're going to talk about that. I also want to touch on a few things. I want to touch on Mohammed Elarion. He had a great interview in the Orange County Register today, and he had some very, very interesting points. He's one of my favorite economists out there, and I want to talk about his comments. Now, will we run out of gold? That's a question Steve takes on today's market commentary on investtalk.com. Take a look. Do you have a question about commodities? We're here to be reached at 888-99-CHART. Now we're live 4 to 5 Pacific time each and every weekday. And if you're listening at that time, you can talk to us live at 888-99-CHART. But if you are not with us then, you can always call our 24-hour listener line.
Hey, Stephen Justin. My name's Jake. I'm calling from Chicago. I'm a podcast listener. I was wondering how you guys feel about Foot Locker, that's FL. I'll listen to the answer on the podcast. Thanks a lot, guys. Big fan of the show.
All right. He's asking about Foot Locker. Most people know what Foot Locker is. It's operates about 3,500 mall-based athletic footwear and apparel stores in the U.S., Canada, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand. Earnings are expected to grow 10% this year and 10% next year. It's supposed to earn $4.35 in 2017. I guess their fiscal 2015 has been in the books. Every company's fiscal year is a little bit different. Some companies' fiscal 15 end at the end of last year. It's weird. Anyway, so they're growing sales at about 7%, earnings about 20% year over year, you know, looking backwards. But looking forward, they're expecting about 10% growth. The stock chart is pretty good, 84 on the relative strength level. Return equity is 21%. That's a very healthy number. This will be a very economically sensitive name, so understand that. Let's see, what's the market cap on this thing? Market cap's about, we'll call it $9 billion, $8.7 billion. Free cash flow about $500 million. That's pretty good. I like that. Good free cash flow, good profitability. See what their leverage, financial leverage isn't too high. They don't have a ton of debt on their balance sheet. I like that. I like the sales growth, etc. And they're a great name, you know, in retail. They're not a giant name, but when it comes to athletic shoes and apparel, especially in the basketball side, they do great. This is a huge, great name. 1.6% dividend yield. My biggest issue is where a lot of them are located. Remember, they're mall-based. A lot of them are malls, and malls are kind of dying nowadays. So it'll be interesting to see how they can expand their growth model in a different way. But they're still growing. It's a great brand. It would say it's, from a cash flow perspective, it's fairly cheap. From a price-to-sales perspective and price-to-earnings perspective, it's, I would say, at value or so. So overall picture, slightly undervalued, going to be economically sensitive, so understand this can go down dramatically in a recession. But if you had a long-term time horizon, I like Foot Locker, good profitable name. I don't think it's going anywhere, and I think it will do well. And you get that nice dividend yield, which they raised last year, which was nice. Now let's take a quick look at the market today, since I didn't do that earlier. We had the Dow close up 118 points, the NASDAQ up about 30 points, and the S&P up 14. Gold was up, oil was up. I mean, we were everything was really up. Even interest rates were up. The 10-year Treasury actually ended up flat. The 30-year Treasury ended up about 4 basis points, which was kind of interesting. So you had the yield curve, I guess, steepen in that sense. So that's a positive. What else? The jobs report. Let's go back to the jobs report, which was released on Friday, on the Good Friday when the market was closed. And it said employers had added 126,000 jobs in the month of March, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Now, that was much weaker than what analysts had been expecting, which was about 250,000 new jobs. So much weaker than expected. And that was the lowest number since December of 2013. And not only was that poor, but they also downgraded the jobs numbers, or revised the jobs numbers downward for January and February. February was revised down to 264,000 jobs after coming in at 295,000 jobs when it was initially reported. And January's figure was downgraded to 201,000 jobs from 239,000 when it was reported. So that's about a 69,000 job difference, plus a miss of about 125,000 jobs. So you're talking about a disappointment, about 200,000 jobs from what was expected. Right? And I don't think anybody, I don't know how much analysts were expecting them to downgrade the previous jobs numbers, but you're talking about a big miss, and that has pushed the expectations for rate hikes going out this year to probably September, maybe October, November, etc. So that was really interesting. And jobs growth are really, really slowing. You had declines in mining. You had even areas where it was growing nicely before, it was weak. It was weaker than usual. And wage growth ticked up to 2.1%, which is above that 2% target, which is interesting. One thing that everyone needs to understand, though, about these jobs number, this is a lagging indicator. This isn't leading. This isn't something that makes you go, oh, well, this is what's going to happen going forward, because this isn't a good indication of the economy going forward. It's a good indication of what the economy was doing last month. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. Your money questions are always welcome. We'll try to answer them next at 888-99-CHART.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. And coming up on the next Invest Talk, above average investing through dollar cost averaging, how to smooth out the ups and downs of the market. We hope you'll be listening to that podcast. If you're near Northern California, you can sign up now for our Saturday morning wealth conference at the San Jose Hyatt House on April 25th, 9 to noon. You can find out more about it and register right now on investtalk.com.
Now let's get back to work answering your questions today. Get your question to us anytime. You can call our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART like this caller did.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. It's Henning from Kiev in Ukraine. Thank you for your kind wishes and thoughts. Much appreciated. Things are looking up. My stock today is Harley-Davidson, ticker symbol HOG. I'm thinking of taking a position because I'm thinking of acquiring a growth stock with an outlook of maybe 5 to 10 years. What's your valuation and what do you make of the stock? Thanks a lot and keep up the great work. Bye-bye.
All right. Harley-Davidson. The symbol is HOG. It's a very clever ticker symbol. And they manufacture Harley-Davidson motorcycles as well as related parts, accessories, clothing, and collectibles. Obviously, a great American brand. And, you know, I'm not sure how well the brand is doing, you know, comes to brand value. But they're at least their earnings are going up. Now, could that – a lot of that is economic related, surely, because 2008 they made $2.92. 2009 they only made 40 cents. So, you know, in a recession – this will be hit. So that's something you have to understand from the very beginning. It's a very cyclical name. Yields 2%, 2% dividend yield. Decent amount of debt. I'm not a fan of that. But return equity, 29%. That's nice and solid. $13 billion company. And they do about $900 million in free cash flow over the past 12 months. I like that ratio. That's a nice, what I call a free cash flow yield. And I like that yield because it shows that the money that's coming into the business after putting out all the capital spending, it's the money that is there to reinvest in the business or put in the coffers for shareholders, pay out to shareholders, etc. Like I said, it yields about 2% in dividend, and the payout ratio is very low, 28%. So a lot of cushion there, so the dividend should be pretty safe. Like I said, don't really like their debt levels, a little elevated for me, and it's not really going down, so I don't like that, but their profitability is strong, but with that leverage, what that does is in a recession, you have earnings that can fall pretty quick, so I'm not a fan of that, and they really haven't reduced it considerably since the financial crisis, so I wish that management would try to do that a little bit more, but obviously that would hurt those ratios, but it's a good company, great brand. Is it a growth name? I think it's a long-term secular growth name, but I would have to do a little more work, like I said, on the brand. You know, is that brand going to hold up with millennials? And, you know, obviously the baby boomers like it, and they're retiring, and they're going to have more time and I guess money to spend on buying motorcycles and things like that. But I would really, if you're thinking about a growth name, I would do a little more research on what's the trajectory of their brand. Just because their earnings are going up, like I said, that could just be because of the economics, the economy getting better. But if over the long term is a growth play, I want to know that that brand has staying power and is going to transition to the next generation. And to be frank, think of the millennials. I just don't see a lot of millennials identifying with Harley-Davidson as a brand. So I could be wrong, but I would do a lot of research on that front if you're looking for, you know, a 5, 10 plus year time horizon. And I think you're going to in between times, you're probably going to have a recession. You're probably going to get this much cheaper. So you have to deal with good volatility as well. So understand all those things, do a little more research, but the basics are there. They make a lot of money, good profitability, you know, decent growth, nice decent dividend that's growing, and the ability to raise that dividend as well. So I like that, but I want to do a little bit more in-depth research. So that was Harley-Davidson. Hog is the symbol. So let's talk about diversification. Diversification is very important. Why? Because it provides the potential for improving returns, risk reward, risk adjusted returns. Okay, and you know, a lot of people think diversification. Well, diversification is going to save you from volatility. Well, it can save you from one-off volatility, right? If you invest all your money in one particular company and they have bad earnings or there's fraud or whatever, you can lose all of it very quickly. But if you diversify into a ton of different companies, or I won't say ton, but multiple companies, then you increase your potential risk-adjusted return because no one event is really going to kill your entire portfolio. But if the whole market goes to a hell in the handbasket, as they say, like in 2008 and 2009, you saw that even well-diversified investors, big and small alike, found that they had failed to diversify their way out of the financial crisis or financial hurricane that hit with the financial crisis. And I think the biggest problem that many investors, particularly individuals, have is that they're being goaded into misdiversifying, resulting in higher investment fees a lot of times, mediocre performance, and potentially even more risk than they realized. And it's really sad, I think, a lot of times, because a lot of salespeople use the word diversification to sell whatever they're hawking. And, you know, appropriate diversification is important both in terms of returns and peace of mind. But a lot of salesmen are stretching the word diversification into persuading investors to get into all kinds of different investments that really don't provide proper diversification and won't protect them from market volatility and often have high fees. And if you go back to, we get a lot of calls on the show, how many stocks should I own in my portfolio? And we see this for clients, new clients coming in, and they say, you know, okay, I don't want to do this anymore, I can't do this anymore, I have the time or the knowledge or the discipline, etc., which is case for most people to do it on my own, so I'm going to hand it over to a professional like us. That's what most people do. And they have tons of positions and misallocations. You know, one stock is 12% of their portfolio, another stock is 2% of their portfolio, and then they have a bunch of stocks that are 0.5% of their portfolio. Then they might have 20% of their portfolio in Apple, and it's all over the board. There's no real rhyme or reason. That's how most individual investors are when it comes to diversification. Now, studies have shown that proper diversification is about 20 to 30 positions. Once you get over 35 positions, there's really no point. And that's why we keep our usually our average allocation to one particular company is about 3%. Sometimes a little less, and there's a little more, but about 3%. And that gets us in that 30 range. And so that's the most important that when you're talking about how many stocks you should own, that's really where you should be looking. 25, 30 names, that's pretty good. And, you know, many investors balk at paying a professional to do this. But a lot of times they layer on fees by trying to do it themselves because they're using all these ETFs or mutual funds. They think they're doing the right thing, but they don't understand how adding a particular position can reduce their portfolio's volatility or improve the returns. And any good investment advisor is going to have the software to do that for you, and do that for their clients' accounts. So it's important for people to understand this. And then commodities. People have been touting commodities as a great diversifier, but you know, there's a thing in quant, in the quant world, and they say when you know big nasty events like the financial crisis happen, all correlations approach 100%, and really commodities as individually aren't a great diversifier, and they don't have good long-term performance. They don't. Now there's great traders and there's good companies that mine for particular commodities, and they're in the commodities market, and you can make good profit and good money off them long term, but they're not a good diversifier. So the five really mistakes are too many investments, right? Over 35 investments, I think is just too, or stocks is just too much. Commodities are just not a great diversifier. Diversification based on market cap. Well, it's better just buy great companies no matter what market cap they are. And then buying illiquid, high-fee investments such as hedge funds and especially non-traded REITs. We see that all the time. Don't buy non-traded REITs. Bad place to be. Filled with tons of fraud, illiquid. You're going to get pitched them, I promise you. If you have a lot of money, don't touch them. Let's go to Chuck in San Jose. How you doing, Chuck?
Pretty good. How about you, Justin?
I'm doing well. What can I do for you?
Okay, you got a great program. I really like it.
I appreciate it.
I've got Hawaiian Electric.
Mm-hmm.
The code is HE.
Yes.
And NEE bottom.
Uh-huh.
Now it takes about a year, and I think they bought them at 35, and it's down to 31. Now when they buy them, and it all goes through, then it goes up to 35. Should I hang on to that or to sell it? Which is the best way to handle that?
Well, if it is 35, are you sure it's 35? Because that's a pretty big discount.
I thought it was, but I could be wrong. I've been looking at it. I've had it for a while, and it was, I don't know, maybe it was 32 or 33.
Yeah,
it's... They bought it. It's been hanging around that.
Yeah, I guess
price.
It could be 35 because it did trade up to almost 35 late last year, early this year, and it's been kind of selling off a little bit since. Now,
yes.
So that's a pretty decent discount. Now, the big question is this going to go through? That's the big question. And when it's trading this much below that level of 35, makes you wonder, is that sale in doubt, right? And if it is in doubt, it'll probably go back quickly to the high 20s from 32, you know, if it does fall through. So I would have to do a little more research to figure out whether this is something that is definitely going to go through. That is a pretty big discount from 35 to 32. You know, you're talking a 10% discount or so, right? From 35 dollars a share, and so that's pretty big discount for a buyout. I would do a little. Let's see, I would do a little more research. You know, do me a favor. Go to investlock.com, click on the contact Justin button. Remind me. You know, say I called on the show. I'm talking about HE. You know, do you think this deal's gonna fall through? I'll do a little more research. While I'm not, you know, taking calls, and I'll give you a little bit better opinion on that.
I'm not real good on the internet.
Oh, you're not? Okay. Well, then, to be frank, I would just sell it. I mean, you made your money. You're profitable. I mean, your upside's only $35 a share. Your downside is if the deal doesn't fall through. So I would just sell it. I mean, you're probably getting some dividends in the meantime, I would assume.
In the 3.5, yeah, I was getting 3.5 where it changed to... Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Hawaiian Electric. Their ex-dividend is 220, so their next dividend date will probably be around 520. So you got about a month and a half left until you get that dividend, the next ex-dividend. So maybe you wait for that and then sell it. That's probably what I would do.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. Thank you, Justin. Have a good one.
You too, Chuck. Now, when you call with a question or comment, we stop everything to get right to you. So feel free, give us a call. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us right now. I'm Money Manager Justin Klein, and I'm here for you on Invest Talk.
It's really a challenge to determine your true tolerance for risk. But here's a tool that can help. Try our free risk analyzer. It can tell you a lot about yourself and how you match up with your retirement portfolio. Try it out. It just takes about 3 minutes. It's free and it's there for you on investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Mohammed El Arian. There was an article over the weekend in the Orange County Register down here in Orange County, California, where KPP headquarters is and where I live, where Steve lives. And Mohammed actually lives right near me in Laguna Beach. And he did an interview with the Orange County Register. From background, who is Mohammed El Arian? He is the former co-CEO of PIMCO, the largest bond fund trading company in the world. And he's writing a new book called The Only Game in Town, The Rise and Possible Fall of Modern Central Banking and What It Means for You. It's a working title, but he did an interview, and I think it was a very interesting interview, and I kind of want to read some tidbits from it because I think there's certain people in the marketplace that I really respect what they have to say and their thoughts, and he is one of them. And he's speaking tomorrow on inequality, and he says, rich people have captured all the income growth of the last 7 years. And he says, a little bit of inequality is good for our economic system because it creates incentive, right, to improve yourself, get better, make more money, etc. But a lot of inequality actually creates negative economic effects and has become inequality of opportunity. And then they ask, what should be done? He says, the government should be using fiscal policy, taxing the rich more, supporting the sectors that are critical to equality of opportunity, like education and health. Now, you may or may not agree with that, but it's his take. And he says they should remove tax loopholes, like private equity, inheritance tax should be higher, etc. But what's most interesting is when he gets into central banking and what our Congress needs to do to fix our kind of malaise that we've been over the past 6 years and where his money is. And I'm going to talk about that coming up after the break because I think that is very, very interesting and important as well. Now we're coming up in the last segment of the program. Let's try to get to your question. Give us a call. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me on InvestTalk. Let's go to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, Justin. How are you?
Doing well. What can you do for you?
Just a question on GDX. I sold it today, but I'm not sure. Is it still a buy, or is there positive resistance now, or what do your opinion might be?
Well, it definitely has resistance up in that 22 range, 200 moving average. But I like it. I think the dollar is going to get weaker. There's been a tremendous position towards a bullish dollar position, but I'm not so bullish on the dollar anymore, especially after its huge run. And I don't think the Fed is going to be able to raise rates as dramatically or as quickly as the market has priced in. And so when the expectations of a big rate increase from the Fed over a short period of time, it meets the actual realities of not being able to do that because of weak economic fundamentals, I think dollar is going to weaken and gold is really going to take off. So I would stick with GDX, which is the Market Vectors Gold Miners ETF for everybody else out there.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for calling. Now, before the break, I talked about Mohamed El Arian in his interview with the Orange County Register today or over the weekend, and it was pretty interesting what he had to say about central banks. And he's writing his book on central banks, and they asked, why write a book on central banks? And he says, well, this is a historic period in which central banks are the only game in town and when it comes to policy. But central banks do not have the tools to deliver what the global economy needs. We need more potent, reinvigorated growth models. The West fell in love with the wrong growth model 10 years ago. It fell in love with finance as an enabler of prosperity, and the whole society fell in love with leverage and credit as a way of prospering. Obviously, he's talking about the housing bubble, etc. He says, we're entitled to accumulated debt. People bought homes they could not afford. Government borrowed money they could not pay back. Regulators believed that finance was so sophisticated that you could lessen regulation on it. So this romance with the wrong growth model fell apart in 2007 and 2008. And they asked, now what? He says, we're struggling to find a new growth model because the political system hasn't stepped up to its responsibility. The reforms of corporate taxation, the reforms of the labor market, retraining workers, developing apprenticeships through public-private partnerships. Either government, politicians, and companies will step up to their economic governance responsibilities, and we will turn to something sustainable. Or if we don't, then you will have low growth and financial instability going forward. And he says, "How would you fix it?" He says, "Well, we need a Sputnik moment. We need an economic Sputnik moment to really get the people in gear, our Congress in gear, politicians in gear." And he says, what is it, what is your money in? That was the question. What's their money in? He said, he's in cash. And he says, central banks have, he says, asset prices have been pushed by central banks to very elevated levels, and he doesn't like the way they've done it. Let's go to Bill in Oakland. How you doing, Bill?
Pretty good.
What can I do for you?
I'd like to find out about Monster Beverage. Are they going to get bought out by Pepsi or Coca-Cola?
Are they? I don't know. I don't have my crystal ball with me at the moment. It's a definitely an expensive name. They're doing well, but I mean, I'm not paying the type of multiples for Monster that the market is putting on. I mean, a 50 P ratio. Earnings supposed to grow 22% this year, 20% next year, which is good. But at these elevated levels over the long term, not my cup of tea. But you know, in the short to medium term, you know, the stock looks good, the chart looks good, you know, earnings momentum looks good. Analysts are upgrading their earnings expectations. So, short to medium term, thumbs up. But if I'm talking long term, I think you're going to find a much better level to get into this name at some point over the next 3 to 5 years.
Okay,
Bill.
Good.
Thanks for calling in. That was Monster Beverage Corporation. The symbol is MNST. Now, before we close the hour, there's a standing invitation to you to enlist in our Insider Program. You can sign up to be an InvestTalk Insider for free. You get access to our library of invoice sheets that we have created to help you understand some important financial concepts. There are lists and webinars, all types of resources for you to become a more knowledgeable investor. Just go to investtalk.com. I'm portfolio manager Justin Klein, and for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, we hope you'll join us again on the next InvestTalk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.